Hello and welcome to the Transcontinental Daily Podcast, Episode 7, with, as always, race veteran Karen Tosti and myself, Rob Quirk. Tom couldn't be here with us again. He is en route to Control Point 4, I think. So, yes, so hopefully tomorrow we'll get him. So, how's it going, Karen? You all right?
Evening, Rob. Yes. Yeah, well, thanks. Glad to be back here.
Yeah,
Another evening, another podcast. Loving it.
Another podcast. Yes, and hopefully we'll get Becky back soon too. There was a lot of good feedback to the episode you and Becky did together.
Yeah, it's fair enough though. She's allowed a weekend off at WOMAD.
Yeah.
Not at all jealous. You know,
but
people riding epic bike races and going to festivals, but little old me sitting here at home making a podcast.
Still in beautiful York. Well, today is Sunday, a whole 7 days since the race started all the way back in Gerardsbergen, which I don't know about you, feels like a lifetime ago. And I'm sure for everyone who's racing the race, it definitely must feel like a lifetime. Definitely an emotion, if not anything else. I think the most interesting stories today will have been coming out of Control Point 2, the Gavia Pass, way back in Italy in the Alps. It closed, well, what time? Yeah, it closed just about 2 hours ago today. And yeah, so today we've seen a lot of emotions in the faces of our intrepid riders, you know, feelings of joy for the people who made the cutoff, and of course pain for those less fortunate. We'll be having a real sort of like deep dive into Control Point 2 today, but I think we will just go over how the race is unfolding at Control Point 3 over in Dermator in Montenegro. How's the race looking at the moment, Karen?
Yeah, so we've got the same three race leaders as when we spoke yesterday. So we've got Adam Bialik, Ulrich Bartolomeus and Christoph Strasser as the top three. I think it's fair to say the gap between them and the chasing pack is not quite as large as it once was, which I think we were calling yesterday as well. So there's really not much room for error on their part. It's too close to call and there's really all to race for. And again, feel like we're saying the same thing every time, but it's going to be interesting to see what's happened next time we meet. Anyway, they're on their way to Control Point 4 and I think we're expecting them to arrive there at some point tomorrow. Fiona has now passed Control Point 3. And as we speak, she's riding the parkour. And yesterday we were saying it was pretty close between Fiona, Amre and Megan. Amre and Megan were taking a more coastal route. Fiona was taking the more inland route. And we felt that Fiona had maybe stalled, but now she is clearly back in the lead amongst those three women. And it may be that more easterly route again has paid off and shown to be faster, because it did look like Fiona was stalling a bit, but anyway, she's back in front. Amory's not too far behind. Just checking the map. I think she's not too far from the control point. Just past Mostar. So I guess is that maybe heading for the control point tomorrow?
Yes, I mean, it's not a massive distance. The hardest part is deciding which way they go, whether they head north, whether they head south, or whether they take the direct route through the gravel track in the middle.
Yeah, and I think, Rob, you pointed out earlier that it does feel like quite a few people are now taking that direct gravel route, which you described yesterday. Do we have a sense as to whether that's paying off for people? Are people on bikes that suggest they're equipped for the gravel route and knew what they were getting themselves in for? Do you have a sense of that?
Interestingly, it's definitely quicker. And for instance, let me just check the name. So Brendan Cassidy and Bruno, they both took the direct route today. And yeah, I think definitely shaved off. Sorry, my tracker is freezing. They definitely shaved off hours over some of, Bruno Ferraro and Brendan Cassidy, they flew through that gravel section. So it is short. It's, I think, the highest point is 1,500 meters of elevation. I mean, it's a border crossing, so they were always traditionally on natural borders, which mountains make good ones. So yeah, it is a bit of a slog up the hill, but then once you're over, it does make a lot of sense. I did actually, as we were researching this episode, it occurred to me that we have been told a lot of the riders have been listening to the podcast as they're riding. And I wonder if us discussing this has actually maybe influenced some of people's route choices. What do you reckon? I don't know. This is, I hadn't really thought about it before, obviously, but now having seen, I mean, I think five riders have took that route now directly across. There's also, I mean, another 150 odd people behind them who, you know, have the opportunity. So I wonder, are we influencing the race?
I don't know. I mean, it would be interesting to know the reasons for people taking that route. It could also be, you know, once you've seen one person in front of you taking that shortcut, if you're checking your tracker, checking the tracking map as you're riding, that can affect your route. You might make a decision to change based on what you're seeing other riders do. I'm not sure, Rob, how much your description of a 30 kilometer gravel walk was persuasive. But maybe we can have some post-race interviews to find out why people made that route choice. I guess as a bit of a side note, and maybe if riders are taking that route based on what we're discussing in the podcast, maybe it would have been helpful to have added another bit of information when we were discussing it yesterday, is that we understand the kind of official word from Race HQ is that this gravel route isn't formally banned, but there's a potential that riders might get a penalty for it. And essentially that's because you're crossing a border, you're crossing out of the Schengen zone without passing an official border checkpoint, which I think technically speaking, you shouldn't do. So
yeah, well, I mean, this whole area gets geopolitics is, you know, very interesting when you're in the Balkans. And there was a rider on Facebook before who was it? I'm trying to remember. I'll have to check. But he said, you know, when he went to the border of Montenegro, they gave him a very funny look at the border and they were all rushing about in the background because he didn't have a stamp in his passport entering the country. I didn't face that problem because in the edition I did it, I went through Kosovo, which is not recognized by all the countries that border it. So it is a state and it is recognized by some countries, but it's not universally recognized. So when I exited Kosovo, into Greece, you know, it didn't, or Macedonia, it didn't register to them or when I entered it either, because borders, I mean, let's not get into all the geopolitics of the Balkans right now, because that might take a while. But, you know, so interestingly, people who are, you know, exiting the country north and entering in Serbia will be facing maybe a few different problems. So these riders might actually end up getting held up at the border, or maybe the border guards would just get used to it and fly, just you know, wave them all through.
It's going to be interesting to see if we start hearing any reports of that coming through from riders' social media and so on. It looks like we'll have a larger sample size than as the race goes on, with more and more people taking that route. So then quickly just looking at the pairs. So we've still got Stefan and Theo leading the pairs race, with Richard and Samuel Gates still in second place in the pairs competition. I did see a nice little update from the Gates pair. I think it was earlier. It was either early this morning or late yesterday. But a bit of an update, essentially, after they had passed through control point 2 yesterday, and a bit of an insight into what they've been going through. So it's a relatively brief post, but they've talked about there being storms, waterlogged kit, sleeping on a bank foyer floor because all the hotels were full. And then they were expecting, as they were moving out of the Alps, to be tackling extreme heat next. So that's, I guess, what we're seeing everyone experiencing as they're passing through Croatia, Bosnia, Montenegro, Serbia, and so on. And the Gates pair have said that we're sore, but we've been managing our injuries and making good progress. We're currently sitting in second place in the pairs competition with a lot of ground to try to make up. So I thought that was exciting, because they're still very much in the race in their heads, and that is more than half the battle. So great to see that. And yeah, wishing them on. It'd be great to see a bit of a jostle for positions in the pairs race.
They're actually currently taking the northern route. So, I mean, we have seen riders on that route making up lost time compared to the ones taking the coastal route, and Stefan and Theo are on the coastal route, so... You know, if they get their game together, you know, they might be able to put a really strong ride in and start closing that gap. So, yeah, again, it's like every sort of category in this race seems to be hotly contested this year. There's no clear winners, or as yet, you know, people who are like gonna storm away with the win. So yeah, it's still all to be had. As we said earlier in the podcast, we were gonna do a little focus on control point 2. Control point 2 closed at 6 p.m. today, and of course, because of that, there's been emotions running high. Plenty of tears were had from both those who made the cutoff and those who sadly did not. There was lots of stories. Did you see any of the stories that came out from the control point today?
Yeah, it's always pretty powerful and emotional stuff, actually, at this point in the race, where people have traveled, you know, people have been riding for a week now, covered a lot of ground. And I think to have that control point cut off so tantalizingly close, possibly reachable, but possibly just out of reach. It's, I can imagine, quite an almost stressful experience for some riders. So yeah, not at all surprising that there's been a lot of emotion at the control point today. So it's kind of been really difficult and to see some of the heartbreak and the high emotions and the pain that people are going through to get there, but also really amazing to see the relief on people's faces, kind of the adversity that they've overcome to get there. So I think one great story was that of Jason. He's Cap 106. And you might remember that he was in hospital, I think, after a car accident a few days ago, and that lost him 24 hours of riding. But against the odds, he's managed to make it through the control point, which is just absolutely amazing. So just massive kudos to Jason there.
Wow.
And then there have also been quite a lot of images from the Transcontinental race account, but of Cap number 46, Petra Scherer, who made it into control point two, I think, really early this morning, in tears, full of emotion, I think probably mainly of relief. It seemed like she's had a really difficult few days in the mountains, I think dealing with cold and also really struggling to find a hotel. I think we've seen a few posts of people just not being able to find anywhere to stay in that kind of area, because I guess it's peak tourist season up in the Alps, and people are being caught out essentially. And you might remember Chris Thomas, the Control Point 2 coordinator, who joined us a few days ago on the podcast, and he's actually just sent us in this little sound bite to give us a sense of what's been happening on the ground over there at Control Point 2 in the final hours, essentially, before the control point closes.
It's Chris, Checkpoint 2. Very sad to be finally closing the checkpoint after such an amazing few days. Unexpectedly emotional, wasn't really sure what to expect, having never had the opportunity to volunteer before. I think I kind of knew what the riders would want from us, but I didn't really know what to expect for me and the other volunteers, and it's been unbelievably emotional. Pretty much starting from number 46, Petra Scherer, I was working through the night watching her dot climb up the Umbrau Pass at almost 1 o'clock in the morning, and then descending down, going outside and feeling the temperature and knowing that she would end up in Bormio at around 1 o'clock, hoping that she had a hotel, not knowing, and watching her dot go from place to place to place, thinking, oh my God, she's struggling. I really hope she finds somewhere. To then see her when she finally made it up to the checkpoint here this morning, the emotion on her face, as you can see in the pictures, was overwhelming for pretty much all of us. And that was the way the day continued. We had people pushing the limits, pushing their bodies, pushing hard to make the time, really, really going deep. And you could see it on everybody's faces. It was absolutely unbelievable. And the effort that these guys are putting in is just so incredible. We're all really, to be honest with you, we're all really moved at this checkpoint. It was fantastic. From Petra to another noteworthy arrival of Jason Smith, who was obviously knocked off of his bike, had issues with the bike, had issues with his hands, with his shoulder. We saw some of the injuries that he is kind of managing day to day, from his fingers to his shoulder to the backs of his legs, and he's still continuing, and it's so impressive. It's really inspiring. And then all the way through to the last sort of five that came in, Eric, number 248, pretty much broke down in front of all of us, and that was unbelievable. You know, you realize how far these guys are going beyond what they've done before, and that they're still willing to keep going. And I think that as the time comes down, you add that pressure to the situation, and that then adds another emotional element. And there wasn't really a dry eye in the whole of Checkpoint 2 when Eric came. It was so emotional to see the effort that he'd obviously put in and how deep he'd gone. And for him to make it was just absolutely fantastic. The last arrival that we had, cap number 118, Frederic Roudon, came in at 5:30, and I'm now standing and talking to you at 7:30, and we haven't had anyone else yet. So he's the last one in. Absolutely fantastic for all the guys that got here so far, and great effort to everybody still racing. We are all very proud of you at Checkpoint 2, and I would just like to say I'm very proud of my team as well. Thank you. Yeah, super proud of all the guys that volunteered, that gave up their free time. They've been absolutely fantastic, and a credit to the Transcontinental. So that's it from Checkpoint 2. That's it from me. Thank you for a great experience, and I hope everyone enjoys following the rest of the race. Cheers.
Brilliant. So, yeah, that really gives a great sense of what every rider has been going through over at Control Point 2. Thanks for that, Chris. Really nice bit of info. And well done to Petra and Jason. They've, amazing rides, and let's hope they can keep it up and push on through right to the finish. As Chris said, the last rider who made the cutoff today was Frederic Roudon, who was the 147th rider to pass through the control. So well done to Frederick for making the cutoff. But that does mean, you know, there was quite a large body of riders who won't have made the control point today. Sadly, our man Jorge George was one of them. So if you remember, we talked about him yesterday in the episode. On the very first night at the start of the race, he was back-ended by a truck while he was waiting at a traffic light, and you know, it tackled his wheel. He spent a lot of time repairing and had to try and get back in the race. But sadly, you know, he's missed the cutoff. Haven't had a chance to check his social media yet, but I'm going to hope that he's going to push on and go for the finish anyway.
Yeah, it's really sad to see. I think I did see a post from him a couple of days ago, or maybe it was yesterday, where it sounded like he'd come to terms with the fact that he wasn't going to be able to make it to the control point in time. I think there's actually been a series of incidents and bike mechanicals, and there's a post somewhere where he's saying, you know, just cue up the Benny Hill music now, basically, because I think it's got to the point where it's just comic. So yeah, I hope he does carry on. Of course, everyone who doesn't make the control point can continue the race as a finisher. They just don't get the general classification, and I think a lot of people do continue. You know, the general classification is really a minor part of that journey. And they'll still be a TCR finisher if they make it to Burgos.
Yes.
And I know Jorge's he's a race veteran, so I'm sure he's made of steely stuff and will be continuing. But yeah, wishing him good luck.
So, of course, not only have we had the cutoff today, but we also have people who scratch, so people who did not finish. And so I will go through the list of new scratchers. Apologies if there's any repeats on this. It's sometimes a bit hard to find everyone and whittle them down and stuff, but hopefully I think this is the up-to-date list. So we've got Ines Ogilvy, the Cat 221, Carl Carini 94, Eric Ringvist 204, Dominic Engleke 136, Oliver Mallard 180, Hendra I'm butchering the names, Wyaya 126, Armin Pusele 87, Lena Rogner 23, and Dominic O'Branagar 114. And we also had two pairs scratch today, or in the last few hours since we last reported. So Hannah Lutz and Robert Schelling, which is 258 A and B. From social media, I understand Hannah had a knee injury, which was just preventing her from riding. And then Paul Redbarns and Greg Larter, which is Cap 257 A and B.
Instead of calling this the scratch report section, I think it should just be how many names can we get wrong in 1 minute?
Yeah. That goes without saying. So, next section. So, social media, there's been, you know, with continuing the theme of the highs and lows of the race, I think there were some really nice posts on social media from various riders who have scratched or thought about scratching. So Natalie Smith, cap number 10, who actually scratched from the race, I think 3 days ago or 4 days ago, so one of the earlier scratches. But her Instagram has been really good, where she's been posting her post-race recollections. So her experience of preparing, racing, and finally scratching from the Transcontinental. And she just had a really nice post, which I'm going to read out in full, because I think it sums up the feelings greatly. So 2 years of build-up and pressure going into this race all exploded and came undone within the first 36 hours. I made 360 kilometers, rode for 24 hours, slept properly once, crossed three countries and the major cities of Brussels and Dusseldorf. I was stopped by the police once, ate one McDonald's, that's not enough, had my cards declined.
Say only one.
Had my cards declined three times, encountered one truck full of dot watchers who knew me by name, and one car who recognized me as a TCR rider by my cap in Dusseldorf without seeming to be following my dot. A race enthusiast and previous TCR rider, Instagram account Boof on Wheels, appeared in Brussels providing some chat and enthusiasm for a few minutes during the night. I scratched too soon at the first mental wobble, a few hours of bad stomach after having my spirit seriously dampened by my bad route choice the previous day, where I lost around 3 hours purely to traffic lights. I took a train, which turned into seven trains, as bicycles were not allowed in the high-speed trains in Europe, to Wallonia to meet Justin and spend some days decompressing and digesting what happened whilst walking and cycling through the forest and river-filled valleys of Belgium. Instead of downtrodden, I have emerged filled with excitement, plans, and new strategies for next year's race. It was a bit of an elaborate way to train for TCR number 9, but I'm coming back. Well, I mean, that really captures that's a really amazing summary and really captures the whole experience of preparing, racing, everything, like from the dot watchers turning up to cheer her on at the side of the road and all knowing her name. I mean, that's a very good summary of what it is like to be in the TCR.
Yeah, I love that post, and I think it shows this is someone who says they've scratched too early and they scratch relatively early on in the race, but already they've experienced so much in that amount of time. I think that really, just such a wealth and richness of experiences in just the first part of just the first part of the race. And it's really awesome to see Natalie's spirit and how she's using that experience to propel her into next year's race. And that's, I've got a lot of respect for that, because I think that can be quite a difficult experience. I guess we talked about it a bit, Becky and I, the other day. I think it can be pretty difficult experience, scratching and the regrets and questions you might be asking of yourself. But I think that just shows what an amazing attitude to processing and using that experience and seeing all the positives in it and using that as a platform to launch yourself into more plans. I'm really excited to see what she does next.
Absolutely. And we've got another really nice post here. Do you want to read this one out for the listeners?
Yeah. So this one's from Mark Malloy, Cap 57. And essentially he's reflecting on nearly but not quite scratching. So really great stuff to see. So he says, again, this is taken from Instagram. So he says, true story, I went to the train station to go home, but all the trains were cancelled due to a derailment. So I sat under a tree in the rain for 2 hours feeling sorry for myself, then remembered that I'm doing this to show my kids that anything is possible, however unlikely it is that you can do it. I had a scream, maybe a tiny cry, then set off slowly to CP2. I got there this morning after climbing the Stelvio last night, the pass next to it, and doing a mega descent in the dark. The team at CP2 were incredible. I was so happy to see them, and they showed me great kindness when I needed it most. I had a big cry this time, which took me by surprise. Now I've climbed the Gavia, another monster after that, and I'm sat in the sun with a sandwich and a Coke, thinking that life couldn't be any more different than 24 hours ago. We say to each other in our house, everything will be all right in the end. If things aren't all right, it's not the end yet. And it feels like I've a long roller coaster to go, but that these words have never been truer. I'm still unable to travel at any speed as I can't sit for long on my sores, and it's excruciating each time I resit, but I'll push as long as I can. I hope all the other riders are having fun. Fuel up and see you down the road.
Wow. Well, I mean, right on the edge of scratching, and it's more of fortune due to the situation. If those trains hadn't been cancelled, he might have been sat on one heading home, perhaps regretting his decision. But great to see he's still sticking it out. I mean, I think crying is a theme of today. Lots of people crying. Have you cried during the race?
Yes. Inconsolably as I was riding along on many times. I mean, there's lots of different reasons to cry on something like this, right? Joy, relief, pain, potentially even boredom sometimes. It's not at all surprising to see stuff like this, but I think Mark's post there really, again, just shows that huge difference that can take place in your morale and how you're experiencing the race over 24 hours. And as you say, it just takes one kind of freak thing, in this case trains not running, to turn your day around. But yes, I have cried a lot, Rob. How about you?
I'm trying to think. I think definitely when I made that control point free, my face screwed up in a weird way from a bubbling of emotion that I'm not really sure I can describe. It was so many feelings all at once that my face contorted because it couldn't process what was inside. That's really, I guess, a lot of people do these races. I mean, you obviously get the ones at the front who, you know, are maybe quite clearly going for a win, perhaps. But I think the majority are going on the journey, not just, you know, a physical journey across, you know, Europe, across the landscape, across countries and borders. But it's this internalized journey to, you know, like, discover something or process or, yes, and yeah, it can make so much bubble up inside. It's hard to describe.
I think I cried basically the entirety up the last parkour to the finish line when I did TCR. Just, I was inconsolable. It was a combination of just relief that I'd made it, frustration that I actually hadn't quite made it yet, and I still had to climb up this relatively long climb that my legs were really having nothing to do with. I felt so helpless. I think I got off and stopped several times and just sat down. Not sure if they were tears. They were multi-purpose tears.
Multi-purpose tears.
Yeah.
They were cleaning your bars as well.
Yeah.
Practical, functional tears.
Yeah. Shall we move on to the listener questions?
Oh, yes, this is a good one. Do you want to read it?
I'll read it out. So this one is from Sana Jerkins. I'm not sure where Sana is writing in from, but anyway, thanks for your question, Sana. And probably actually just to say at this point, I'm really sorry that we're not able to get to everyone's questions. There have been so many super interesting questions coming through to us on email, and we thought probably people wouldn't appreciate a 3-hour podcast, so we're having to just pick one or two every day. But thanks so much, everyone, for your questions, and do keep them coming in. So Sana says, hi Karen, Becky and Tom, seems to have forgotten someone in that list, Rob. I don't know how you feel about that, but it's understandable. We can ask you as well, Rob.
No, I'm not answering.
Sana says, I listen to your podcast as soon as it's out there. Thanks so much for all the updates and background stories. My boyfriend, number 249, Wout Jacobs, is riding right now, and by listening to the podcast, it makes me feel a little bit closer to him. Just as a side note, that's really awesome to hear. So we'll keep an eye out for number 249 and see what he's up to. Yes. Anyway, Sana says, since you've mentioned psychology as a very important part of this race, as a psychologist, I've got a hypothetical question for you guys. So imagine that you would let all the participants of the TCR complete a personality test. What would you think the outcome would be like? What kind of characteristics and personality traits do you need to join and actually finish this race? That's a great question, Sana. What do you reckon, Rob?
Well, I think this is quite a difficult question to answer, but there's maybe an interesting slice, because I think there's so many different types of people who do this race for different reasons. But perhaps if we were to look at people who are race leaders or the sort of people who win these races, I reckon there would be some very, very interesting personality traits that go on there.
Such as?
I don't know, psychotic? No. but I'd imagine there'd definitely be sort of lashings of determination, strong-headed, things like this. I don't know if you would necessarily call it a personality trait. Yeah, maybe. But I guess as well there needs to be a degree of having an ego, or, you know, having the belief in yourself that, you know, maybe goes beyond or above the normal, you know, a sort of supra belief. But yeah, and I think for others it will be still determination, but I guess the idea of, like, I don't know, I find it really hard. I find this really hard question to answer, because it's like, you know, what are personality traits? Like, because I always think of the idea of being intrepid, being an explorer or adventurous. But then I keep wondering, is that personality? Is that personality? Yeah, I guess being adventurous can be a personality. How is it defined in psychology?
Yeah, not sure. Sana, maybe you can write back and let us know what is the definition of a personality trait in psychology. But I jotted down, there probably is something about adventure and doing something new. I think there's also something that's about kind of having an interest or curiosity in what you yourself can do. So it's almost the kind of, this is going to sound corny, but it's almost like an internal adventure, because you're probably, especially if you're at that faster end, you're not engaging loads with actually the countries that you're going through and the places you're stopping off. So it's, in some ways, it's less of a adventure in terms of discovering new places, but yeah, that kind of sense of, well, actually I'm quite interested to just know what I can do. And I think you've seen some people like Robin and Sebastian Broer, who are come from this, you know, great cycling pedigree, but maybe haven't done this kind of ultra stuff before, and they've talked about needing to be quite humble towards the race and kind of just interested to see what happens for them. And I think that's probably something that I'd imagine quite a lot of people come with that kind of attitude and have that type of personality where, yeah, they're just interested to see what happens. I'm sure others come with the determination and ambition, because they already know what they would like to see happen. But yeah, does that count as, is that about personality? Unsure.
I just did a quick Google then, and in theory, in psychology theory, there's possibly five broad personality traits, but the one that seemed to stand out to me was neuroticism. I'd imagine, just the kit grid that people put up and just selecting stuff. So that must induce a great deal of neuroticism in nearly all the riders. How do you plan for this? I guess that's quite interesting.
There is something about, maybe linked to that, there is something again for the people who are focused on trying to do it really fast. There's something about being very meticulous and being very disciplined. When you see how little time people waste, for want of a better word, when they're going through a control point or when they're trying to order food or when they're stopping off at a shop to order something, there's no messing around. Everything is kind of done to precision. And I think it takes a very particular type of person who can keep that up for
definitely
9 days, definitely 10 days, however long people end up racing for.
So yeah, I think neuroticism, I think, can be applied across the board to that extent. Okay, well, I think that really brings us to the end of this episode. It's been an interesting one. I hope everyone's enjoyed hearing the stories coming out of Control Point 2. If you do have any questions or think there's something you would like to hear us discuss in the next episode, please do send your questions to race@transcontinental.cc. So email those in with pod question as a subject. But yeah, that's it from me.
Oh, that's it from me too. That was my cue. Just thanks very much everyone for listening. And looking forward to speaking again tomorrow around about this time again, Rob.
Me too. Can't wait. See you tomorrow, Karen.
Cheers.
This podcast is supported by our race partners, Apidura, Physique, Hutchinson, Kinesis, Komoot, LEM Helmets, and Pedaled. All the music has been created for this series by Joe Skinner.
God, I don't think I'm that bad on social cues in real life.